Welcome to Radio Naturopath. It's the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Okay. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had someone call in, and they wrote in and they were talking about, naturopathic care for COPD. So I wanted to address that briefly so then we can get on to talking about fun stuff. What we kind of want to do today is we want to be the background for your Thanksgiving preparation. So either you're probably either out driving around, getting your last minute stuff, or you may be at home starting to cook stuff. And I'm going to be doing both of those things today. Can't wait. It's going to be kind of fun.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, no patient care for me until next Tuesday, which is kind of nice. So I get kind of a break. We're going to run the Manchester Road Race. Ron's already got a shirt on. It's good. So it's nice. It's going to be wicked cold tomorrow.
Wicked.
Wicked cold.
Yeah, wicked cold.
Very cold. Okay. And so we're going to try to keep ourselves warm in the cold. Meanwhile, let's talk about COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And so chronic obstructive pulmonary disease usually has it's divided into two basic forms. One of them is emphysema, and the other one is chronic bronchitis. And chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, the problem is in the bronchi and the alveoli, the air tubes going into your lungs, and there's chronic obstruction of them. So when you have emphysema, you have long-term ongoing misuse and to some extent collapse of air tubes going into your lungs, whether it's the bronchi, the bronchioles, and the alveoli. Some of those tubes just don't work. So if you have emphysema, you get collapse of the tubes, and so air can't get into them, so it restricts the amount of air you get into your body. If you have chronic bronchitis, that's a bronchitis that just doesn't go away. You have a chronic inflammatory condition. It's not the same thing as asthma. So you have an inflammatory condition where those bronchioles and alveoli are always inflamed. They may also be producing a lot of mucus, and it just doesn't go away. And it can be autoimmune. It can be allergic. And it can be just a failure of the immune system to clear itself. And so chronic bronchitis, these are not the same thing as just having asthma. And so it's an unfortunate situation. So the reason that you see people walking around with portable oxygen, you get portable oxygen because you have parts of the places in your lungs where you do gas exchange that just don't work. So you're not going to get as much oxygen into your body. And so when we breathe oxygen from the air has about 20-21% oxygen in it. And so that's good if you have a mostly functioning set of lungs. If you don't, you don't have as much surface area to get that 21% oxygen into your lungs. So they try to hedge your bets by giving you a high percentage of oxygen. So that's why you have an oxygen tank and you get pumped oxygen into your lungs. So that's how that works. So how would you treat that with natural medicine? Well, it's difficult. What you want to do is you want to maximize maximize what you have left. So what you're going to do is if you do have restriction of those airway passages, you're going to do things like make sure that to keep them not congested. So there's various herbs that can help with that. There's warming and drying herbs that can help with that. Things like ginger and turmeric and sage. There's wonderful herbs that help to clear the lungs, like yerba santa, also known as Areodictyon. And even simple herbs like wild cherry and licorice are good lung tonics. There's a lot of lung tonics. There's another one called Asclepias tuberosa. That's another lung tonic. I believe that is pleurisy root. And that works well if you actually have pleurisy. So pleurisy is not the same as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's where you have an inflammation of the sac that encases the lungs. But there are a lot of herbs that you can use if you want to maintain the health of the inside of the lungs. Vitamin C can be helpful because it's going to strengthen your collagen. So the structure of the tubes that you have left is going to be better. You want to keep your immune system healthy. So you have to look at things like, are you eating a good diet? Are you eating your antioxidants? Are you eating your fruits and vegetables? Are you staying away from too much starch and sugar? Are you getting your essential fatty acids in, which help to reduce inflammation? Those are all things that can certainly help. So it's not likely that you're going to get back the collapsed areas of your lungs, but you can make the most of what you still have by doing that. This is a job for you. You could do essential oils. You can do steam inhalations where you put essential oils, that aromatic essential oils, lavender or eucalyptus or mint, into a steaming pot that you take off the burner, and then you put a towel over your head and put essential oils in, and you inhale those, and that can help to open up your lungs. And like I said, things to strengthen your lungs. So antioxidants are going to help. Your mixed carotenoids, not plain beta carotene, but mixed carotenoids, vitamin E with mixed tocopherols, vitamin C, and then things to strengthen your immune system like elderberry, ginseng, American ginseng, zinc. All of those are going to be helpful. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is where the tubes of the lungs are obstructed, either with mucus or with collapse. And you get that way. Some people, there are different ways that it happens. The most common way, guess what the most common way you get COPD is?
Smoking.
You got it.
Yep. Bada boom.
Lung disease is basically the number one cause in the U.S. is smoking.
And people still smoke.
They do.
It's amazing how many people still smoke.
I know. We just don't hang out with them. No. We just don't see them.
So here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Smoking versus vaping.
Yeah, well.
Mm-hmm. That's a can
of
worms.
Right. So I don't know that vaping would cause COPD. Mm-hmm. Because there's no smoke involved.
Exactly.
But when you're vaping, you're still inhaling nicotine.
Right, but you're not inhaling all the other chemicals that come from the burning.
Oh, but you're inhaling chemicals that
there's
in the
other chemicals.
Oh yeah, there's lots of chemicals in the vapor.
Lovely.
So I don't know if the vapor is going to be if it's going to cause COPD. It might still cause lung cancer because there are chemicals that help to suspend the vapor into your lungs.
Right.
And you still have, and vape people who vape still have nicotine.
Okay.
And you have all the flavors, but there's a lot of artificial ingredients that go into it. It's not necessarily healthier. You just don't have burning hydrocarbons. You just have not hydrocarbons that are not burning, and that prevents more of a cancer risk.
From someone who's exposed to secondhand smoke, when someone is burning the embers,
yes,
it's better for the secondhand smoke problem, though, right?
That's probably true. From the that way the person can kill themselves and they're not going to kill everyone around them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you know, their kids, because the kids are growing up around them and they're exposing them to secondhand smoke, and that's a problem. Or the the solar salesman shows up at your house and you want to still have your nicotine, so you're vaping with him, but you're not blowing smoke in his face.
Did this happen to you?
Oh yeah, a couple times now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, this is a common thing. It's actually relatively common.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
People are vaping instead of smoking when
they
have guests.
Yeah,
They're just vaping now.
Right, they're vaping now instead.
Yeah, because you still get the nicotine.
Right, still get the nicotine. Now, apparently, if you look at some of the statistics, and I don't have any numbers in front of me right now, but the younger people are more into vaping than people that are old like me.
Yeah.
But
It's newfangled.
Right. But the last person that was vaping in front of me is my age. You know,
yeah.
She was just That's what she does. She vapes.
And does she do that because it's polite, or she doesn't like the smell, or why is she vaping?
Keeps this. I asked her actually. I was curious, yeah. And she said, "Well, it keeps the smell out of my house,
right?
Which is nice because sure. You know I went to that other call where these people were obviously chain smokers, and they walked in the house, and all you could smell was cigarette smoke residue, whatever.
And we're
they
so
weren't
not used
smoking
to it.
In front of me at all.
Yeah,
but." I came out and my clothes stunk because of, smoke that is all around the house.
That's third hand smoke. And that's still toxic. It's still dangerous.
It still didn't feel healthy.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
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 The problem with secondhand smoke is that secondhand smoke is not filtered. So when you're when you're smoking around someone else and you've got a filter, you're going to get less toxins than the person who's around you because they're getting it from the end of your cigarette. It's not filtered. So they get a higher concentration of toxins from you. So you can get lung cancer from breathing secondhand smoke all the time.
Yeah.
You know who I know. Worry about? My patients who work at the casinos.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're exposed
don't smoke.
To it all the time, but they don't smoke.
No.
Oh.
Mm-mm. Right.
Oh, that's just,
right.
You know.
Yeah, because the casinos let you smoke still.
So that becomes a hazardous-related workplace.
So when they come in, because I have patients. I don't have as many as I had when I was working in Mystic. But I do have a few that work at a couple of the casinos. Because Mohegan's not too far from here. I might have somebody at Foxwoods. I definitely have a couple people work at Mohegan because Mohegan's, really not far from here. I put them on high dose vitamin C. I tell them that because their vitamin C needs, when you smoke or when you're inhaling secondhand smoke, your vitamin C needs are higher and the vitamin C, it's not going to correct the problem. Again, this is one of those examples of where you're chronically standing in front of the train and asking me to give you a pill that's going to help you from the inevitable damage that's going to ensue when the train hits you. So it's one of those situations.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Oh, I know.
It brings a little more to reality, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. It's like, I smoke. How can you protect me from dying? What you're talking about is harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
That's because when you're looking at treat the cause, well, you should stop smoking. But people can't stop smoking right away because it's really hard to do. It's very difficult to do. And so when you're treating people who smoke and you're trying to get them to help them to quit smoking, what you try to do is you try to help them make better choices in their lives and, get them eating healthy, get them exercising, get their healthy habits on board first and make sure they're happy in their lives and they reduce stress. And then once they've got all those things in place, then you help them directly with the quitting of the smoking. So if somebody walks into my office and they want to quit smoking, unless they've done everything, they've done all those things already, if they're just stressed out and, your average person who walks into my office, they're stressed out, they're not eating right, they have a difficult job, maybe they have a commute, maybe they have kids, and they're also smoking, I'm not going to tell them to quit smoking right away because they're not going to be able to do it. They're not going to be successful. They have to have something. One of the reasons they're smoking, one is because they're addicted to it, and it is a hugely difficult addiction to quit. But the other reason is it's a stress reducer. I mean, ultimately, it's not because it hurts you in the long run and it depletes you of nutrients that you need to help you reduce stress. But in the short term, it is a stress reducer. And the addiction cycle, when you off the nicotine, you become stressed. And when you put the nicotine on board, you calm down. So now you're in this cycle of I need to smoke to calm down. And so once you get those people with healthy habits on board so that they don't necessarily need to smoke as much, then you can work on directly quitting the cigarette smoking. And then you do things like there are tinctures you can give. There are herbs that you can give, things like Indian tobacco, lobelia. And you do lobelia, and then you do a whole bunch of lung herbs. You do nice lung herbs like marshmallow root and yerba santa and anamopsis and wild cherry and licorice. And there's huge amounts of them, mullein, elecampane. The list goes on and on of herbs that can help your lungs. Isn't that nice that nature thought your lungs were really important? So nature gave us lots of herbs that are nice to the lungs. One of my favorite herbs for lungs is lungwort. And there are several lungworts. Somebody said to me the other day, what's with that word wort? And Amy said to them, well, a lot of plants seem to be called wort. I don't know why. And I looked at them and said, that's because wort is an old English word for plant.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
W-O-R-T.
Yeah.
Not W-A-R-T.
No.
W-O-R-T.
Yes.
Right.
Wort.
Right.
So anything that's a wort. So mugwort is a wort. I'm not sure what the mug part means. Mugwort. St. John's wort is the plant of St. John.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you're right. There's a lot of wort.
And lungwort is a plant that helps your lungs. So lungwort, the lungwort I'm thinking of is Sticta pulmonaria, which is the super cool plant, and it's a lichen, and it grows out of trees, and it looks like a leaf, but it's a lichen, and it looks like lung tissue. It really follows the doctrine of signatures. It's super cool, and I don't see it around here, but it grows in the forest in Oregon. I used to see it there. That was the great thing about being in Oregon, because the variety of species, the biodiversity there was so awesome. It was just such a great place to study plants because there were so many different kinds. And, you know, the soil was so rich that just things just grew out of the ground happily. You know, you drop things in the ground and they grow. It's just that volcanic soil.
Amazing.
And that mist.
Yeah.
Just a lot of minerals.
Perfect
and,
situation.
Yeah. Here. And a lot of the plants you see are really healing. There's this one terrifying plant that grows out there, Oplopanax, Devil's Club. Boy, oh boy, what a wacko plant that is.
Really?
And, yeah. And
why?
It grows in, you should see what it looks like. It's frightening. It's aptly named.
Is it just because it's frightening looking, or is it like deadly or anything?
It's nothing. It is not dead. It's only deadly if you walk into it because it's covered in horrible spines.
Is it prickly? Yeah.
Yeah, all covered in horrible spines, and it's the size of a small tree, and it's one of those plants that it grows up and then it sticks out a rhizome that goes back into the ground, and then it comes up out of that rhizome again and goes up and down and up and down like that. And it's terrifying. You should find a picture of it. It's really scary looking.
So what's it called?
Oplopanax or Devil's Club. Not Devil's Claw, Devil's Club. And the funny thing is that this plant, as terrifying as it looks and as hard as it is to harvest because, you know, it's a mess of prickers.
Oh, look at that.
It's really freaky looking, yeah. But it's a really benign plant. It's like, it's called Oplopanax because it's kind of like ginseng. It's a really benign, it's a really wonderful plant. I mean, it's like ginseng and it's one of the, it's not a ginseng, but it's like ginseng, which is why it's called Oplopanax. And you can take a lot of it. It's very benign. You know, it's not harmful once you manage to take care of it and tincture it and stuff.
Wow.
And it's a little bit sweet tasting. And it's one of those, you know, adaptogens, those herbs that help you to deal with the environment. So as terrifying as it looks, if you can get to it, it's so scary that it will help you deal with scary environments. And one of the things it helps with is blood sugar regulation.
It's really spiny. Even the leaves are spiny.
Yes, they are.
It almost looks like a maple leaf, but it's got spines all
and
around
it. Oh, it's 10 times. Those leaves are 10 times the size of a maple leaf.
Oh, yeah.
You should look for somebody.
Yeah,
you should look for somebody standing next to one.
I'm trying to find that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it kind of almost looks like it's related to a cactus or something because of its spininess.
But it's
like a cross between a cactus and a briar.
Yeah, okay.
How's
yeah, but it can't be a cactus because it grows in Oregon.
Right, right.
There's no way because it grows in damp, you know, warm, you know, maritime climates. Doesn't grow in the desert. It grows in, you'll find it in the woods in Oregon. You know,
it's
awesome.
They're big.
But it's a really, it's one of my favorite plants. Yeah, really, but it's like a small tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they grow 10, 15 feet tall.
Right.
Yeah, so they really tower
cool.
over. When I'm standing next to one, it will tower over me.
So it's Devil's Club if you're interested in trying to figure out what the heck we're talking about here.
Yes,
it's a really interesting plant.
Oplopanax.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of interesting in its own way. Like, you know, like the Venus flytrap is an interesting plant.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really weird.
Well, it's funny you should mention the Venus flytrap. That plant is called Drosera. And Drosera has some toxicity associated. You can't use too much Drosera. But Drosera is another plant that's really, it's an expectorant. So you use Drosera, as, you know, Venus flytrap, as a, it's a lung tonic. So if you have COPD, you can use that as well. But you wouldn't, you would use...
We went around in a big circle here.
Yeah, but you would use, you wouldn't use a huge amount of it. Also, you can use Drosera as homeopathically, the homeopathic remedy. So the symptoms that you will see with the Drosera, the person basically has whooping cough, or they have something that looks like whooping cough. They're going to cough really hard, so much that they get cyanotic. They turn blue, and they might even barf. Sometimes you cough to the point of barfing, and there's a few homeopathics that if you do that, then this homeopathic will probably help you. So yeah, we can hop over to homeopathy. You can have COPD and you can have various kinds of coughs, and Drosera is one of the homeopathic remedies you might use. Another one is Spongia. Spongia and Drosera are two classic remedies you use two classic homeopathics you use for coughs. And Spongia is a sponge, you know, it's a sea sponge. And that's a great herb it's a great herb. And also, I think you can use tinctured Spongia, that it's not toxic, and you can use tincture of Spongia as one of the things you use. But it's a sea sponge. And you make a homeopathic remedy out of it. And if you have a cough where your throat is all tickly and itchy and it makes you cough like that, and you'll cough from laughing, but there's a barky nature to it, you might have croup. Croup is something very specific. Croup is laryngotracheobronchitis. So that's what croup is. So when your larynx, your windpipe, and your bronchi are all inflamed, you get this lovely resonant barky cough. And so that's what croup is. And I'm assuming that croup is an onomatopoetic name, meaning, you know, croup sounds like the sound you make when you have croup.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. So anyway, COPD, the number one way you're going to get COPD, unfortunately, is smoking. But you can probably get COPD if you live in Beijing, you know. That's why you see people in Beijing walking around with masks on.
I wonder if you can get it if you live in Northern California right now.
Right. Mm. It's not good. Well, that's the thing. Inhaling smoke, that's a really bad thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good. I mean, their air quality is what they're claiming the air quality in California with the fires that are happening right now, although I think it has finally calmed down a little bit. But it was the worst air quality in the world.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're talking worse than Beijing.
Yes.
Which is pretty bad.
That's really
bad. And worse than, there's also, I think Seoul, Korea has really, really bad air also.
Oh.
Because of all the manufacturing that's there.
Right. And they don't have restrictions on emissions.
Right.
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 Like they do here. And so remember, in This Is Us, that's how Jack died, from smoke inhalation.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it was weird. He died of a heart attack. And I think that's something that can happen, that it would not, I doubt it would be from atherosclerosis, but Jack has been some kind of tachycardia. They don't say whether it's atrial or ventricular tachycardia, but we learned in the last couple of weeks that Jack has tachycardia. And so his heart is not, he has a little arrhythmia. And so then when he went into that burning building to save his family, that stressed his heart and lungs, and it caused inflammation. It caused oxidative damage, and it probably caused oxidative damage to his coronary arteries. And he probably had, it's possible that he already had some atherosclerosis, but the oxidative damage probably caused coronary vasospasm, which is why he had the heart attack. I'm talking about Jack from This Is Us.
Yeah, this is a very popular television program right now. It is one of the highest rated ones, I think.
Ever.
Ever. Ever. Oh, that's just
And
you.
I'm behind. I need to binge watch my episodes. It's
Fran,
bad.
Fran likes her TV.
And I won't, right, and I refused to watch last night's episode because I was behind. There are episodes that come on live, and I won't watch them if I'm not caught up. I'm caught up on Midnight Texas.
That's good, dear.
Yeah, yeah. I love Midnight Texas.
That's
really
nice.
Fun. It has monsters in it. It's great.
It does.
It's awesome. So so COPD. The other way you can get COPD, emphysema. There's a kind of emphysema you can get from an alpha antitrypsin deficiency. And so there, so you have a deficiency of a certain enzyme that will ultimately lead to emphysema. And I believe there's an oxidative damage piece to this, that there's it will make it so that you have that your lungs aren't, they don't build themselves the way that they're supposed to, and that can ultimately lead to emphysema as well. And again, the emphysema and chronic bronchitis are problems with restriction of the lung tubes. You can also get chronic restrictive airway disease, chronic restrictive pulmonary disease. And when you have restrictive disease, that's where you have problems with the what we call the interstitium. So your lungs are made of tissue that holds up all the tubes. It's an organ, and it's made up of tissue that holds up the tubes that expands and contracts. And it's also made up of tubes where you get your gas exchange. So COPD affects the places where you get the gas exchange, and CRPD, chronic restrictive pulmonary disease, affects the lung tissue itself. And you could have both, unfortunately. So chronic restrictive disease is not usually caused by smoking. It's usually caused by exposures to toxins. And so the pneumoconiosis can cause restrictive disease. So if you're inhaling things in the environment that affect that affect your lung tissue, so unfortunately that would be one of the things that could affect the people who are in 9/11, because they were inhaling all kinds of toxins that could get into their lung tissue and cause restrictive disease. People who are exposed to asbestos and inhale asbestos fibers, they can get asbestosis. So any condition that causes restrictive disease, and you can get, if you breathe in fiberglass, from insulation, you can get restrictive disease. The other thing is black lung. When you, the coal miners, they get pneumoconiosis. Pneumoconiosis is when you inhale substances chronically that land in the tissue of the lungs, and they cause inflammation and ultimately oxidative damage and scarring so that the lungs can't expand and contract. So it's the muscle of the lungs, the tissue in the lungs that surrounds the air tubes gets affected, and so that your lungs are restricted and they can't expand and contract. And that's a lot harder to treat. And one of the things you do for those people, I mean, you get their airways as open as you possibly can, possibly with all of those other herbs. But that's where you're going to use some of our more out there therapies like drainage therapy. You're going to do massage. You're going to do acupuncture, anything to get the lungs to release. And then you're going to try doing drainage therapy. So drainage therapy is a branch of homeopathy that the classical homeopaths don't agree with, because when you do classical homeopathy, you want to use one homeopathic remedy at a time. When you do mixed homeopathic remedies, classical homeopaths don't like that. And that's okay. And to an extent, I agree with that. The point of only using one remedy at a time is that you want the vital force to only interact with one frequency at a time. That if you're giving a whole bunch of frequencies, it's confusing to the vital force. But I don't buy into that, because I'm a pragmatist, and if it works, it works. I give people single homeopathic remedies, and I also give people mixed homeopathic remedies. And if a drainage remedy is going to work, I'm happy to give it to people. So that's where I'm going to be getting into, drop dosages of mixed homeopathics that were designed to release things from the lungs. And there are a number of companies that put together products like that, numerous. There's not just one. There's several, and some people have their favorite companies, and some people have their favorite products. And I have a couple companies I like, and I give people drainage drops, and I've seen nice results with them. So there's a company I'm using drainage drops for Lyme disease, and I've seen nice results for that. So that's a synopsis of chronic obstructive and chronic restrictive pulmonary disease. So thank you for that question. So let's talk about food, because tomorrow's Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yay. So first of all, if you have the opportunity to donate anywhere, so people who don't have as good access to food as you do can get fed. please do that. That's a wonderful thing to do. The Mansfield Community Center right now is having Giving Week. So for Giving Week, can anybody go to the Mansfield Community Center?
I am not sure about that.
Oh,
I would call the front desk.
Yeah, I'm not. But the classes are all no charge at the Mansfield Community Center right now, if you're a member. I don't know if that means that the community can come, because there may be a difference between Giving Week and open house.
I think Giving Week is designed for members only.
Okay. So if you're a member of the Mansfield Community Center,
but you can call the front desk to find out.
You can take any class that's not being offered this week at no charge, and it's asked that you donate a food item, a non-perishable food item, if you take the class, which I need to do because I took class. Oops. Yeah, I'll do that on Friday.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
I just have to bring it another time. And so if you have things you can bring to your favorite soup kitchen, that's a great thing to do too. And if you want to go work at a soup kitchen, that's another thing you can do.
Yes, they could always use your help.
Right. So that's a nice thing.
But they do appreciate your donations.
Yes.
More so than your help. I just read that somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because, you know, it's, well,
they have volunteers.
They do, and they really, you know, their financial help is always the best for
them.
They
need financial more. Do they need financial more than they need actual food?
Yes.
Oh.
I just read that somewhere there's a bigger benefit to that.
Right, because then they can select the food.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also some sort of weird thing politically involved, so that they get more funds from other directions. I can't remember exactly. I just read this
about
a week
ago. That's really interesting. That's good to
know.
So making a donation to your local soup kitchen is a nice thing.
Yeah.
To do for the holidays.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're at a quandary as to, you know, do I want to continue doing this, you know, holiday giving thing, or do I want to do something, maybe cut back on it a little bit, maybe you can use, you know, some of the revenue that you had for doing that to, you know, donating to a local cause.
There's a lot of
great causes around that need your help badly.
So big shout out to Covenant Soup Kitchen in Willimantic.
Absolutely.
And big shout out to the Friends of Assisi Food Pantry in Danielson, my friend Jean Sear, and all the lovely people that they have me up there every year, and I get to talk to the volunteers. And they run a really nice organization. Jean Sear is awesome. She runs a really terrific organization.
And also a big shout out to Windham Area Interfaith Ministries and to Perception Programs and also to the No Freeze Shelter.
Yes, the No Freeze Project.
Yeah.
Yes.
These are all very important things.
Yes. And isn't the Walk for Warmth last week? Well,
it might have been. I think we might have missed it because of other commitments.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, let's talk about other stuff. I wanted to break down your Thanksgiving dinner and tell you why it's good for you. So the first thing, let's talk turkey. So what's the deal with turkey? So you'll see them running around outside right now. And when I see them running around, you know, the live turkeys running around in my yard and crossing the road and stuff. First of all, when you see a turkey, slow down, because there's probably 10 more behind it. Not one, not two, but a whole bunch. Yeah, they tend to travel in gaggles or flocks or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I think they're flocks.
They're social
and
creatures.
All I know is that I remember being on my bicycle and riding around a corner very, very rapidly. And it was kind of a blind corner, and when I came around the corner, in front of me, there were like 12 turkeys on the road.
Yeah.
And one would not want to hit one of those on a bicycle going at a high speed, because that would have been a problem. Fortunately, they all scattered quickly as I screamed at the top of my lungs to get them to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And none of them made an indecisive move to do what the squirrels usually do,
which is,
I'm going to go right, I'm going to go left, I'm going to go right, I'm going to go left, I'm going to get hit, boom, that's it. So... but they were able to scatter before I had any impact. But I think there were some brushing of feathers when I went by. It's a little frightening, those turkeys. We had some in our yard the other day. Did you see them?
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so.
Turkeys in our yard. You pointed them out to me.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Remember
that's
that?
That's right.
Right.
And I was like, run,
Forrest,
run.
That's for Francie's turkeys. At this time of year, she tells them to run away and hide.
They should.
I think that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, and I'm the original little turkey because I was, in fact, born on Thanksgiving.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
You got a big day coming up, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, a week from today.
Are we going to do something special?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I'll be double nickels.
Double nickels.
Yes, that's what Marcy said that. So big shout out to my friend Marcy McDonald.
I haven't heard that one before, but I probably because I live under a rock.
No, I'd never heard it either. It's brilliant. No, I saw Marcy. I was in the pool yesterday, and I saw Marcy leaving the pool. I said happy almost birthday to her. And, you know, we're 4 days apart, and she said we're going to be double nickels. And she has a twin who's also going to be double nickels. And
she has a twin?
It was very fun. Yes.
Does her twin swim like there's no tomorrow?
No.
No,
she doesn't. Does my sister ride a bike 3,000 miles a year?
No. Good point. Does mine?
No.
No.
We wish they did, but they don't.
We do, but...
So turkey is sold in so many different forms. You can buy... I mean, most of the year when I eat turkey, it's funny. I just go to the deli, get pre-sliced turkey, and I get nice smoked turkey, and it's really delicious. Turkey is not native to Australia. So people who eat turkey in Australia, it's imported, just so you know. People like to eat their turkeys. It's a really good source of protein. I think that most people are not allergic to it. I mean, people certainly can be allergic to various kinds of birds, but people aren't exposed to it as much, so they tend to be less likely to be allergic to it. If you're worried about fat, and you probably shouldn't be worried about turkey fat, it happens to be low fat. If you want something that's high protein and lower in fat, turkey meat doesn't have a lot of fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the issues with turkey that, you know, if you cook a turkey too long, it can tend to be dry, which is why everybody loves their gravy on the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And turkeys are 70% white meat and 30% dark. There's good vitamin B6 and niacin in it. And vitamin B6 is an amazing vitamin. It has, all the B vitamins are very necessary. But vitamin B6, if you don't have enough vitamin B6, vitamin B6 is a great anti-inflammatory. Vitamin B6 helps your mood. It helps to navigate. It's kind of a traffic director for neurotransmitters, including serotonin. It's a traffic director for your hormones, like your estrogen. And it's also a traffic director for magnesium. So it's super important. And taking B6 with your magnesium will help your magnesium to work better. It seems like you should have B6 and magnesium in one pill. And so you can get some products that have both in them. If you consume turkey, if you're worried about your cholesterol level, you...
Don't eat the skin.
Well, it just because it's high in fat. But that's getting back to the Ansel Keys.
Oh, is fat bad for you or good for you, right?
Right. And the fat that's in turkey is not going to be that bad for you. But but turkey altogether doesn't have a lot of cholesterol in it.
Okay.
It has a lot of tryptophan in it, which is why people think they get sleepy after
that
may be a bit of a myth that turkey is what makes you sleepy on Thanksgiving. Well, probably what makes you sleepy on Thanksgiving is
you ate too much
turkey stuffing.
You just
stuffing,
ate too much
green beans, potatoes, mashed potatoes, dessert. Yeah, exactly. Now that will definitely make you sleepy because your body's going to make you slow down to digest all that food. You're going to be in, you know, rest and digest.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Eating
too much. I can only eat so much.
I know.
So do people like just generally just overeat?
You have to remember that humans are wired for famine. We are wired because,
right.
We are naturally hunter-gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it called if every time you see food, you eat it? It's called normal.
Okay.
We're wired for famine. We are wired to eat when we see food because we don't know when we're going to get our next meal. We were not wired for seeing a whole bunch of food available to us at the checkout line at Home Depot. That was not how we were wired, or, you know, the gas station. You go buy gas, and, you know, there's a whole culture around you have a gas station. Now you have these wonderful, amazing convenience stores associated with the gas station, so you can't help but, you know, get out of your car and go get a coffee and some kind of a treat when you go get your gas. So it's just culturally what has happened. Food is everywhere, and that's not how we were wired. So people, the other thing is, the more variety of food that you have available to you, the more likely you are to overeat. So if you have a meal that's just, you know, broccoli and chicken, you're probably not going to overeat either of those. But if you're presented with a meal like Thanksgiving dinner, where you have turkey, you have stuffing, you have maybe you have a rice dish, maybe you have some green beans, maybe you have some broccoli, maybe you have a salad, you have some cranberry sauce, and you have sweet potatoes, you can have all of those because you like variety. Like you're tired of your sweet potatoes, but the white potatoes now look good, you know? So when you have a meal with a lot of variety in it, you're more likely to eat more calories and more food when you have the variety. That's just what people do because we're interested in the different tastes. And also we're probably wired that way because the more variety you eat, guess what? The more nutrition you get. So the more different things. What I did was I listed off a bunch of the different foods, and I want to tell you what the nutritional content of these things are. So, you know, practicing harahachibu is a really good thing. Harahachibu is the Japanese-based practice of eating until you're 80% full and not going beyond that. And so that's a really good thing to do. Do people tend to do that on Thanksgiving? Well, it depends how disciplined they are. They might and they might not. I'm not sure what you and I are going to do tomorrow. I mean, we'll see.
We're going to go run in the Manchester Road Race.
No. I mean, in terms of how much we're going to eat.
Oh.
Because, you know, we're going to have
eat until we're full, and then we're going to stop.
Yeah, and we're going to have a nice meal, and they'll
we're
probably
gonna,
be,
you know, take a little rest, and then you'll have a little more later on.
Yeah, there's going to be some variety and, you know.
Have some dessert.
Yeah. All right. So they're worried about turkey being high in sodium, and that's the fear of the sodium thing. And again, salt is only a problem if you have salt-sensitive hypertension, and salt-sensitive hypertension is overrated. Also, if you're eating too much salt and you're not eating enough potassium and magnesium, that is a problem. So if you're eating a lot of processed food that has a lot of salt in it, and you're not eating your fruits and vegetables to get your potassium and magnesium and your calming minerals, then too much salt is a problem. You know, there is a lot of fat in turkey skin, but again, I don't think the quality of the fat in turkey skin is a problem. The tryptophan, if you get enough tryptophan from your turkey, you will get sleepy, probably. And so it's a good idea, of course, to get your turkey raised humanely. It's great to go to one of your local growers, people who raise turkeys, and who give them only organic feed or let them free range. Then you're going to get a much better quality. So you have to be careful about overcooking it because it can get dry. And so it's really good for you. I think as a source of protein and a source of amino acids, and if you're worried about fat content, it's a good way to go. So
it says here 2 milligrams of tryptophan is used for a common dose for helping you with sleep.
2 milligrams or two grams?
2 milligrams.
2 milligrams of tryptophan. That's
being
not
the most
very
common
much.
Dose.
Yeah, that's not
those
very much.
Those who take tryptophan itself, doses up to 5 grams per day have been reported.
Right. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Usually when I'm giving tryptophan, I'm talking, especially if it's 5-hydroxytryptophan, I'm looking at starting it. I'm going to start at 50 milligrams. And then I'm going to go up from there. That's 5-hydroxytryptophan, not straight up tryptophan. But amino acids, you're usually looking at gram doses, you know, half grams and gram doses. You're not looking at milligrams.
So how much tryptophan is there in turkey?
That's a good question. Per unit volume. I'm not sure. You should look that up. I don't know per serving, how much tryptophan is in turkey. I don't know the answer to that. That's a very good question. The other thing is, though, that, and the other thing is, if you're eating turkey, that's why you don't know if it it's got to really have an overwhelming amount of tryptophan to really affect you, which is why I wonder if this idea that turkey makes you sleepy is a fallacy. Remember when you were doing cold cuts and you switched over from turkey breast to chicken breast because you thought the turkey was making you sleepy?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't because I like turkey, and I don't think the turkey made me sleepy. The thing is, when you're eating meat like that, you're getting a whole bunch of amino acids, and they're going to compete with each other for absorption. I don't know. Unless there's an overwhelming amount of tryptophan, I wonder if that's a fallacy. And the reason people actually do get sleepy when they eat turkey is because they're eating turkey and cranberry sauce and sweet potatoes and white potato, mashed potatoes, and there's a lot of fat in the different things you're eating. So say what you will about fat, whether it's healthy or not, that will make you sleepy, and it slows down your digestion. So if your body is in rest and digest, you're going to get sleepy. Your body's going to make you slow down because you're not going to be able to be as active if you have a lot of food on board, because your body's going to want to process the food that you ate. So that's where the afternoon nap comes in, or the early evening nap. So let's talk about cranberries. Cranberries are cool. Okay. They're good for you. Cranberries have anthocyanins in them, and they are anti-inflammatory. They're lovely. And they're native to North America, and they're farmed on like 40,000 acres, super high in antioxidants, and they're really low calories. A half a cup only has 25 calories. So when you're having your cranberry sauce or your stuff with cranberries in it, it's usually spiked with a bunch of sugar or juice or something to sweeten it. If you consume cranberries, you might have less urinary tract infections. They can treat urinary tract infections. It can help to prevent certain types of cancer because of the high antioxidants, helps your immune function, and it can help with your blood pressure because the proanthocyanins strengthen your blood vessels. So that's really nice. They do tend to be quite sour, so people like to sweeten them or dilute them. They do have some vitamin, they have a bunch of vitamin C in them. They have carotenoids and a little bit of vitamin K, the vitamin K1 that helps with your blood clotting. Like I said, they have proanthocyanidins, that are wonderful antioxidants that help with inflammation and help to strengthen your blood vessels. They do have some vitamin K in them. So if you're on Coumadin, that can be an issue. Of course, you know, if you do unsweetened cranberry juice, it can help help to make it so that bacteria don't stick to your bladder as well. It's been shown that they can help slow tumor growth. It may reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. Again, it's because of the reduced inflammation and because it strengthens your blood vessels. Also, may help your oral health. Once again, the same way that it prevents bacteria from binding to the walls of your bladder, it prevents bacteria from binding to your teeth. Same thing. Very nice. So there's vitamin C, there's fiber, there's vitamin E. So if you're going to do dried cranberries, so this is something I learned when we were on the Farm to Fork Fondo in New Jersey. Did you know that New Jersey is one of the cranberry growing states? I didn't know that. We went down to South Jersey, and there are all these cranberry bogs.
Right.
So, and I rode by them and I took pictures. I had my two cranberry series. I went by cranberry bogs in Massachusetts and outside of Middleborough, Mass, in the southeastern part of Massachusetts. The following week I went to South Jersey and I went by a whole bunch of cranberry bogs. It was my cranberry series. And I learned when I was at one of the rest stops in New Jersey that how dried cranberries came to be. And they came to be because they were making cranberry juice. It might even have been the Ocean Spray Company. They were making cranberry juice and they were pressing these cranberries, and they had just basically the cranberry skin left, which is nice and high in fiber and proanthocyanidins. And then one day somebody ate one and they said, "Hey, this is pretty good. It's kind of sour, but it's pretty good. I wonder what would happen if we sweetened it." So they did.
Yummy.
And they went, yum. Mm. And now we have dried cranberries. So just so you know, when you buy dried cranberries, or craisins, as that's an Ocean Spray. Craisins is not a thing. It's what Ocean Spray, it's a protected name.
It's a copywritten or whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, dried cranberries that you like to throw in your muffins and your oatmeal and your cereal and your trail
mix. I like
them
in my salads.
In your salad, right?
I'm a big cranberry in the salad.
Sure.
Thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Bam.
And if you do, those, they're always sweetened.
Yes.
You can get them unsweetened, but they're very sour. They're sour to the point of being unpalatable. So they are either imbued with sugar or they're imbued with fruit juice. And you can get them imbued with organic sugar or organic fruit juice, but that's going to raise the caloric content of it and the sugar content. Cranberries themselves are very low in calories, but once you sugar them up, they're not so low anymore. And it's the calories are coming from the sugar that's added to them to make them taste good.
Right.
So if you want to minimize that, when you make your cranberry sauce, if you're making fresh cranberry sauce,
which you're going to do, because you bought some fresh cranberries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to find a recipe.
Right.
You can minimize it by using a bunch of probably some cinnamon in it, because cinnamon is going to sweeten it up a bit. And cranberry sauce is not going to be that low calories, because you either have to use sugar to make it do its thing, or you have to use juice. Apple juice or orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you do that. But I think that's a nice way to go to use. And that would be another way to sweeten it up, to make cranberry blueberry sauce. That throw blueberries in, and then the blueberries will sweeten it up without adding too many calories. And then you'll have a sweeter confection, a sweeter thing. Terrific polyphenols. All right. So that's your cranberries. Cranberries are good for you. Yay. And you can eat cranberries anytime. All right. Sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are fabulous. Lots of carotenoids, resistant starch. Resistant starch means that it moves through your digestive system slowly, so it keeps your blood sugar regulator and keeps you full. Sweet potatoes have a lot of beta carotene in them, precursors of vitamin A. And so they're going to be great antioxidants, great for your immune system, great for your breathing, great for your, health in general, help you with your blood pressure. It's going to help you be regular because of all the fiber. And a medium baked sweet potato with skin is just 103 calories. So it's not a super high calorie food if you don't add anything to it. Now, if you're going to go putting marshmallows and brown sugar on it, then you're going to raise the calorie content, obviously. But sweet potatoes can help with obesity, diabetes, and heart disease because of that resistant starch, because it helps to regulate your blood sugar. It moves through you slowly, helps you your blood pressure as well, probably because of potassium and also because fiber helps to lower blood pressure, because again, that's going to cause reduced. It's going to fiber helps with.
What else does it help with?
What are you talking about?
High fiber content of sweet potatoes helps prevent constipation.
Yeah, regularity. It helps with your regularity. Absolutely.
Yay.
That's right. And so you're going to have good gut flora because of it. And when you're regular, you're going to have better blood pressure, because you're not going to be reabsorbing toxins that are going to raise your blood pressure and be inflammatory to you. Also can help with cancer because of the beta carotene. And there are specific cancers that can help, like prostate and colon cancer. It may help with fertility. Again, it's the carotenoids and immunity and inflammation and even vision, because, again, you're getting a lot of beta carotene, which is going to help you with your rods and cones, mostly your rods in your eyes. So
one medium spud, there's over 400% of your daily vitamin A requirement.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's not technically vitamin. They always say that about plants, that this plant has vitamin A in it. No, it doesn't. It has beta carotene in it.
Right.
You only get vitamin. There's only vitamin A in animals. There's not vitamin A in plants. All right, let's talk about apples, because it's probably in your apple pie or your apple crisp. They're really good for you. Remember, the apple a day keeps the doctor away. Mm. It's got some. It's got a lot of. It's got antioxidants in it. There was a study that showed that apples are high in quercetin, which helps to reduce cellular death in your brain. So it can help with dementia, and that apple juice may increase acetylcholine. So that's going to help people with Alzheimer's disease. So you give people apple cider and apple juice. People who are diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it might help with dementia. It increases. So it's going to help anybody with cognition because it's just going to increase your acetylcholine in your brain. So it's going to help reduce your risk of stroke. But again, because they're antioxidants, they help your blood, that help your blood vessels to be stronger. And because the fiber is going to reduce your excess cholesterol. And again, because of the fiber and the antioxidants, going to help regulate your blood sugar and even can help to ward off breast cancer, again, because of the phenolics and the antioxidants. And it can help you with your weight because, again, blood, just some of the same things. Certain species improve your gut bacteria. So there are certain varieties, Granny Smith, Braeburns, Gallas, Fuji's, Golden Delicious, Macintosh, and Red Delicious all affect the good gut bacteria and improve your weight. So there's vitamin C, there's some B vitamins, there's a lot of fiber and a lot of phytonutrients, really good for you. So good idea to eat those apples. All right, I wanted to talk about something green. So let's go for the green beans because everybody likes to saute those green beans up or make a green bean casserole. Now, if you're making a green bean casserole and you're putting all kinds of, unhealthy fatty stuff in it, it's not going to be as good for you. But green beans on their own are pretty impressive. They're a legume and, they're popular around the world. They come in, somewhat different shapes. And they can come in different colors. They can be purple, and I've had purple ones before. They're nice. They come in yellow as well. And they can be grown in a lot of different climates. There are pole and bush beans. The pole ones climb like vines, and the bush beans grow lower to the ground. And so there's a lot of nutrition in them. So you're going to be getting a really low calorie, and you get a bunch of fiber, a little bit of carbohydrate, a little bit of calcium, magnesium from them. And they do help with cardiovascular disease. Again, they have phenolics in them. The polyphenols in them are going to help to reduce inflammation and prevent cardiovascular disease. They have a lot of flavonoids and a lot of their anti-inflammatory properties, and which can help to prevent blood clots in your body. Somebody bothered to study green beans specifically for their link to colon cancer. If you eat more green beans, you'd be less likely to get colon cancer. Who doesn't want that? That's really nice. And they can help you control diabetes, again, because of the fiber, and they regulate your blood sugar. They have vitamins in them. They also, like the apples, they have quercetin in them, so they can help to boost your immunity and inflammation. They're also going to help you reduce gout. They have epicatechin in them and catechin, which is in green tea. So have some green beans with your green tea. That's going to help your allergies and your immunity. They're good for your eyes. They can even help to produce, they have carotenoids in them that prevent macular degeneration, and they have lutein and zeaxanthin in them. So you thought it was just your kale that had lutein and zeaxanthin in them. But no, your green beans have it too. They can increase your bone health because of the vitamin K, which means it's going to have a little bit of K2, but a bunch of K1 as well. So they're really, really a nice thing to eat. And they're also low FODMAP. So if you are on a low FODMAP diet because you have irritable bowel syndrome, that you may be able to eat green beans because they don't have too many fructooligosaccharides. So they're really nice. So there's the only thing is they do have some phytates in it. So if you eat way too many of them, you might lose some minerals. But if you eat them in the context of a really healthy diet, they're going to be good for you. I wanted to shout out about pumpkin. Pumpkin is really good for you. So pumpkin pie is going to be good for you. So pumpkin in general, again, loads of fiber, lots of beta carotene, a really easy way to get your carotenoids. So you're going to get wonderful antioxidants and immune support and vision from eating pumpkin. There's a bunch of potassium in them, so it's going to help with your blood pressure. It's been directly studied to help to prevent damage to your eyes. And If you're using pumpkin and you get canned pumpkin, make sure it's just plain old pumpkin so you have control about how much sugar, sweeteners, and other ingredients go into it. And you can get organic canned pumpkin with nothing else in it, and if you don't want to be bothered with, you know, dealing with a real pumpkin. If you want to do a real pumpkin, you absolutely do that. Buy a pumpkin that's meant for eating and bake it, and then you can get all the nice benefits of pumpkin. You get lots of neat pumpkin recipes. You can just throw a little bit of maple syrup and cinnamon on it and eat it like that. And, of course, you can puree it and make it into a parfait or, make pie out of it. So blood pressure, cancer, diabetes, all of the things we've been talking about. So a lot of the things that are on your Thanksgiving table help to regulate blood sugar, preventing diabetes, prevent cancer, and help with cardiovascular disease. So how cool is that? If you're eating, you know, the basic really healthy stuff on the Thanksgiving table, it can be a really healthy meal. So I want to wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving. If you are in a difficult place in your life, I wish for you that someone comes and looks after you, and that you get a meal one way or another, and you get someone to take care of you. And for all of you, have a wonderful, happy, healthy holiday celebration. I hope you get to hang out with people that you love, or you get to do something meaningful for your Thanksgiving.
And so, don't gobble up too much food.
Oh, yeah, I suppose not.
I said it.
All right. So you said don't gobble up. You're very funny. All right. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Hello.
You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.